Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
I want to ask you, Dr. Laposada, have you seen this video before?
No.
Thank you. You can take that down. Did you see anything in that video that would suggest any contact between that mannequin and the vehicle's bumper?
I'm going to see you at sidebar on this for just a minute, please. All right, so jurors, I am going to strike the last bit of questioning of this witness and the video as it goes to this witness. All right.
Dr. Laposada, after you received materials, did you ever ask for any additional materials?
Let's see. I always make sure I have all the scene investigation, autopsy, medical records, police and witness investigation and witness statements. So I felt I had a pretty complete database. I didn't get the x-rays until a couple weeks ago, so that was delayed.
That was newer?
Yes.
You said a medical examiner has to make a determination in 90 days. Is that the rule?
When you work in a medical examiner's office, when you get a deceased in, our national standards want us to have the autopsy report completed and all the associated tests done within 90 days.
Can investigations occur and the additional accumulation of evidence happen after that 90 days?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Laposada.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
Dr. Laposada.
Okay, hold on one second. Jurors, when I strike something, that means disregard it. And what I've struck through this witness, the video that you just saw and some of the testimony means that if it's in evidence, it's in evidence, but it is not part of your consideration with this witness.
Okay.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Jackson.
May I proceed? Thank you. Dr. Laposada, you were just asked a series of questions about body cooling, correct?
Yes.
Does a body, as it's cooling, does it know if it's indoors or outdoors?
No.
If there's a very cold environment, be it indoor or outdoor environment, would it still cool?
Oh, absolutely.
And it would cool at the rates that you earlier described?
Yes.
Even if indoors, if that indoors was cold?
Absolutely.
Your Honor, may we approach along with the Commonwealth very briefly?
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. LaPosada, stand back here for a quick second. Before I sat down the last time, I asked you a little bit about x-rays.
Yes.
And the effect of x-rays on an evaluation by a forensic pathologist. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Are x-rays important for a forensic pathologist to consider?
Yes, they are.
Did you find any... You reviewed the x-rays, correct?
Absolutely.
I'm going to relegate my question to just the right arm of John O'Keefe.
Yes.
Did you find any deformities, defects, breaks, fractures, or hairline fractures of that kind on any of the x-rays that you reviewed?
None.
May I approach on?
Yes. I have a question for you. When you printed these, did you print them from a flash drive?
Did you print this from a flash drive? May I have a moment?
Sure.
I have some assistance with this.
Because you have them up on the...
We do have electronic versions of them.
Why don't we do that instead of the big, the large...
As long as I can mark the large ones, I want those marked and moved into evidence for reasons that we discussed with sidebar.
So those will be... you're objecting to this, Mr. Mann? Okay, well, even though it's the Commonwealth objected, I'll allow those in, but I prefer to give the jury... flash drive with these on them instead of these big. So we will mark your flash drive and you can just go ahead and put it in evidence. We'll mark the flash drive. The flash drive will go in with the jury rather than these very cumbersome additional pieces of paper. And you can go ahead and show them.
If I don't want to have a full discussion open court.
All right, jurors, we're going to make this one really quick. Yes.
Thank you so much. Sorry. I'm going to show these to you and then I'll put them on an overhead. May I approach your honor?
Yes.
Do you recognize this document?
Yes, I do.
How do you recognize it?
I recognize it by the medical examiner identification of Mr. O'Keefe, and I recognize the x-ray of the right hand, the right wrist, the right femur, and I can also tell by the R designation here that that's the right side of the body.
Is this what you reviewed in coming to your opinions and conclusions concerning injuries to his right hand?
Yes.
Thank you.
So these now will mark whatever the next exhibit in A, B, and C.
A, B, and C, yes, Your Honor.
HHH is now 229A.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I need to wait. May I approach?
Yes.
Dr. Hewitt, sister.
Sure.
Do you recognize this document?
Yes, this is a x-ray of the body of Mr. O'Keefe from the medical examiner's office. The R indicates the right side. And we see here the two bones of the arm. There's no injury to them. We see the pelvis bone. There's no injury to that bone. They're perfectly normal, and there's no abnormal soft tissue swelling. It's a normal right arm.
Thank you. I may have this marked as next shoulder.
That may obviate the need to put it up, right?
It could.
To 229B.
May I?
Yes.
Thank you. Doctor, do you recognize this document?
Yes, this is another x-ray at the medical examiner's office of Mr. O'Keefe. And again, it shows the right side. We see some of the ribs there. We see the shoulder and the humerus, the upper arm bone. And the upper arm bone is totally normal. There's no soft tissue swelling around it. There's no breakage or microfractures.
Thank you, doctor. With the court's permission, next in order, some C as in Charlie.
Yes.
Dr. LaPasada, that's all I have for you. Thank you for coming.
Anything, Mr. Brennan?
No, thank you.
All right, Dr. LaPasada, you are also.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Sorry, is there anything else today?
May I have a moment?
Yes.
Your Honor, may we approach?
Okay, Jonas, feel free to stand up and stretch.
Face the clerk and raise your right hand, please. If you solemnly swear, do you ever skip the court and jury in the case now hearings for the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Good
afternoon.
Hello, Your Honor. It's fine. It's fine. It feels good.
All right, Mr. Jackson, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sir, could you please, pull that to you. You're a little on the
gotcha.
Tall side. Pull it to you right up under your chin if you can, and in a nice clear voice, tell the jurors your name and spell your last name for us, please.
Dr. Andrew John Rentschler, R-E-N-T-S-C-H-L-E-R.
Sir, what do you do for a living?
I'm a biomechanist, a biomechanical engineer, and an accident reconstructionist.
Where do you work?
I work for a company called ARCA LLC.
Tell us a little bit about ARCA. What is ARCA?
ARCA is an engineering consulting firm. So we do litigation type work, both civil and criminal, where we look at, for instance, I do biomechanics. So I look at injury causation in different types of events, motor vehicle accidents, pedestrian, automobile incidents, sports related injuries, industrial accidents. We also do accident reconstruction, as well as all types of really forensic type engineering. And we also do R&D, research and development, for private and governmental entities.
What's your current title?
I'm a vice president and director of biomechanics for the Midwest Division.
The director position that you hold, that's the official position at ARCA?
That's correct, yes, sir.
How are you ARCA's senior biomechanist?
I'm one of them, yes.
And how long have you held the position of director of biomechanics and human factors?
It's been at least 5 years. I don't recall exactly how long.
What exactly does is it biomechanist or biomechanist?
Biomechanist, yeah.
All right, I'll get it right by the time we're finished. What is a biomechanist? What do you do?
So a biomechanist really looks at the human body, and we look at the response of the human body to forces and accelerations. We apply traditional engineering, but to the human body. So a mechanical engineer, for instance, might look at a piece of steel, and you know the dimensions and size of the steel. If you apply a force in a certain direction with a certain magnitude, that steel will bend and eventually it'll break. Was a biomechanist or biomechanical engineer, I do the same thing, but I look at the human body. How much force has to be applied in what direction to get a specific type of injury? Whether it's a fracture of your humerus, a concussion, intervertebral disc injury, any type of injury has what we call an injury mechanism. So we look at the response of how the body reacts to forces in different environments. Ultimately, our hope is to actually help prevent and mitigate accidents. You know, motor vehicle incidents, we look at the design of airbags and seatbelts, sporting equipment, how can we reduce concussions and injuries associated with that. So ultimately, we try to figure out how to make the environment and the world safer for people in whatever type of interaction you might have.
Is that sometimes called injury causation analysis?
It is. That's one aspect of it. Injury causation analysis is looking at how an injury occurs. So if someone sustains an injury, as a biomechanist, I can look at the events surrounding that incident and determine how the injury occurred. Now, how someone was positioned, how much force had to have been applied to certain parts of their body to actually produce, say, a given injury.
Why is injury causation analysis important in the broader field of biomechanics? Why do you want to know the causation of certain injuries?
Well, like I just said, our main goal and interest is to really mitigate and prevent injuries from occurring. So in order to do that, you have to know how they occur. You have to know, for instance, hockey, we do a lot of work with the NHL, how certain injuries occur, cervical injuries, concussions, shoulder injuries. So if your intent is to prevent injuries in certain settings and situations, you have to study how the body reacts, how those injuries are created, and then you can determine or attempt to determine how to prevent them from occurring in different events and situations.
What sort of contracts or commissions does ARCA routinely engage in?
We have a number of different contracts. We've worked in the past with the United States military. I helped design what we call the energy absorbing seat for the MRAP vehicles.
Hold on 1 second, Dr. Rosen.
Sure.
Okay.
For the MRAP, which are the mine-resistant, ambush-protected, armor-plated vehicles that they had over in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the issue there is that when they go over an IED, an improvised explosive device, it would blow the vehicle up off the ground. So we were seeing very severe accelerations and forces going through the vehicle, through the seat, into the soldier's spines. And we're seeing severe spinal and head injuries as a result of that. So we worked with the military to design what we call an energy-absorbing seat design. As the vehicle gets blasted up off the ground, the seat's designed to absorb that energy and that force from the blast and the movement of the vehicle and help protect the soldier's spine. We also, as I said, do a lot of work with the NHL. We work with the Department of Player Safety there, the National Hockey League. We look at the equipment, we look at helmets, trying to help prevent concussions, skate guards, how to prevent cuts and injuries, do the skates. One of the big things we did was actually redesign part of the rink. It used to be at the player area, at the end of the player area was a 90 degree stanchion of plexiglass. And what was happening was players were getting checked into the boards at the player area and then slamming up against the glass. And they were sustaining head and cervical injuries. I've mentioned before, it was actually the Boston and Montreal that caused the NHL to take a look at it, the hit of Chara on Pacioretty. He sustained a concussion and a cervical fracture. So they gave us part of the rink to the Winter Classic, the outdoor contest, and we used crash test dummies, hybrid 3, 50th percentile male dummies, and threw them into different configurations of glass. And ultimately, the new design that we developed is a curved piece of spring-loaded Lexan or plexiglass. So now when the players get checked into the boards, it absorbs that impact and they glance off of it. And it's helped prevent and pretty much mitigate any type of head or neck injuries as a result of player interaction at that part of the rink.
Hockey players tend to be pretty big guys, right?
They do, yes.
You said you used the 50th percentile hybrid 3 as a crash test dummy, an ATD. to do your work in furtherance of the NHL contractor commission, correct?
That's correct.
Did you need to use a hybrid three that was the same size as these big, tall, 6'4", 230-pound hockey players?
No, not at all.
Why not?
There's a 95th percentile male dummy, which not many people have or use. The 50th percentile male is basically the gold standard for crash test dummies. And you're probably most familiar with it if you see automotive manufacturers and the ads on TV where they put the crash test dummy in the car and run them into walls and flip them over. Well, they use the 50th percentile for all of those tests. And then they scale the actual injury assessment reference values to different size people. So they record the force off of that, and they might say, well, for the 50th percentile average person, you can sustain 180 Gs of acceleration to the head before you see a severe injury. And then they'll scale that and say, well, the hybrid three has to record, say, 300 Gs before someone twice that size gets hurt. So you just use one size dummy, and then you scale that to whatever size person you're looking at or you want to actually investigate.
Is that undertaking of mathematical scaling, is that an industry standard in biomechanics?
Absolutely. And I mean, it's set forth in NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration. They set, well, the government sets the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards, and that's all the crash tests that vehicles have to go through. And during those tests, they have to ensure that the values on the dummy, on the head, on the neck, on the spine, on the arms, are below certain values to ensure that they're safe at specific speeds. And they scale. They have a lot of papers, actually, which talk about scaling the values for different size people.
Is that an accepted methodology in the scientific community?
Oh, it certainly is. Yes, sir.
Dr. Rentschler, do you specialize in any particular research and analysis at ARCA to evaluate the relationships between crash injuries and crash forces?
I do, yes.
What about kinematics?
Kinematics is one of the specialties, yes, sir.
Fancy word, probably nobody knows. I didn't know it before I met some of the folks involved in this case. What does kinematics mean?
Kinematics is just motion of the human body. So it's looking at how the body moves in different situations. Whether you're in a vehicle and it hits a wall, how does your body move? It moves forward. Will it load into the seatbelt? Does the airbag deploy? Or if you're a pedestrian and you're struck by a car, how does the body move as a result of that interaction? That allows us to look at the loading to the body. Forces are exerted on someone's body because their body's loaded by different objects or different forces. So kinematics is one of the first steps. If you're going to look at injury causation, you have to determine the kinematics of an event.
What are human tolerances?
Human tolerance is really just looking at how much force it takes to cause an injury. So there's been generations of testing to look at different forces. For instance, the humerus, the upper bone in your upper arm. How much force does it take to cause that fracture? They've tested the cadaver bones. There's a lot of research for decades out there looking at different parts of the body, the ulna, the radius, the two bones in your forearm, skull fractures. Almost any type of injury, again, has an injury mechanism, and in order to determine how it occurs, we have to look at tolerance. How much force can the body withstand before you start to see a specific injury occur?
Doctor, how long have you worked at ARCA?
I've been with ARCA now for about 17 and a half years.
How many cases have you been a part of in terms of investigating or conducting crash injury analysis?
Over my whole career, probably thousands of cases. I've been doing this since 2004, so for about 21 years total.
Dr. Rentschler, are you able to estimate how many of those cases that you just talked about, those potentially thousands of cases, have involved motor vehicle pedestrian circumstances?
Oh, I'm sure over the year there's been hundreds of cases. A lot of them are motor vehicle accidents, but certainly a large percent's automobile pedestrian type impacts.
What education, training, and background qualifies you to perform the duties that you just told us about as the Director of Biomechanics and Human Factors at ARCA?
Well, I got my BS in mechanical engineering with a minor in biomedical engineering from Carnegie Mellon University in 1995. I then went on to get my master's in bioengineering and biomechanics from the University of Pittsburgh in 2002. And then I got my PhD in bioengineering and biomechanics from the University of Pittsburgh in 2004.
2004. Thank you. Are you a member of any professional associations associated with your field?
I'm a member of SAE, the Society of Automotive Engineers, as well as the American Society for Mechanical Engineers, ASME.
Are you also a reviewer for an outfit called Archives of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation and Biomechanical Engineering?
I have. I've done peer-reviewed articles for those journals before, yes, sir.
When you say peer-reviewed articles, you're the peer reviewer?
That's right. If you want to submit a scientific article to a journal, you'll write that manuscript and then submit it to the journal, and then they'll send it out to other experts or peers in that same field, probably three others normally, and then they'll review that transcript, send it back with any suggested revisions, and then usually the author will make changes, send it out again, and that's how it gets accepted. Usually it goes through several different iterations before a paper is actually published.
Have you received any additional training following your PhD, formal training or otherwise, in the field of biomechanics?
I have, yes.
Describe some of that for us, please.
Throughout the years, I've taken classes through the NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, as well as SAE, as I said, Society of Automotive Engineers, and at different universities, Virginia Tech, different seminars and classes with respect to biomechanics.
Is that normal to, even for someone at your education level, a PhD, to take continuing education to stay up on issues in your field?
It is. You take continuing education and then also just working with your peers. And when you work in a certain company, for instance, at ARCA, we don't do just litigation. We do the research and development. We have an epic sports branch at ARCA where we look at sports performance of athletes, how to help them perform better, whether you're a baseball player or volleyball player. So it's really the experience and the work that you do that also helps keep you up to date with technology and the different aspects of that field.
Does some of that additional education include biomechanics of high-impact injuries that was offered by the NTSB?
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
Methodology and techniques of crash data retrieval offered by IPTM?
Correct, yes.
What is the IPTM?
That's the Institute for Police Technology and Management. It's actually a school down in Jacksonville, Florida, that offers basically vehicle crash reconstruction and biomechanical classes.
What about human factors and traffic crash reconstruction, also offered by the same outfit?
Yes.
Did you take a course in automobile safety and injury biomechanics from, is this the one from Virginia Tech?
That's correct, yes. Okay.
Did SAE offer a course in injuries, anatomy, biomechanics, and federal regulations?
Yes, that was in Detroit, I think, where SAE is based.
And you took that seminar as well?
Yes.
What about vehicle accident reconstruction methods offered by the SAE?
I've taken that class before, yes.
Linear momentum analysis offered by CAARS?
That was, yes, in a class out in California.
Motor vehicle accident reconstruction offered by SAE?
I've taken that class as well, yes.
Advanced collision investigations out of California law enforcement?
Yeah, I believe that was a two-week class I took. That's the introductory class that they give to the sheriff's department and police officers out in California.
And what about the post-collision passenger vehicle inspection and seatbelt analysis offered by CARS, CAARS?
I've taken that as well, yes, sir.
Have you published in peer-reviewed articles and book chapters? You said you were a reviewer. Have you actually published yourself along with you and your colleagues?
I have published, and that was mainly when I was in graduate school, doing graduate work. I worked at the Human Engineering Research Lab. We helped people with disabilities, so we looked at people in wheelchairs, manual wheelchair users, looked at the forces acting on the arms, how to help reduce injuries, rotator cuff tears, carpal tunnel syndrome, things such as that. So I did publish primarily when I was in graduate school at the University of Pittsburgh.
When you were in graduate school, approximately how many publications did you participate in, either yourself or with colleagues?
Oh, probably 10 or 12 papers and then some abstracts and I believe a book chapter as well.
Have you been qualified in other courts to testify as an expert in the area of biomechanics and accident reconstruction?
I have, yes.
Approximately how many times?
Oh, I've testified throughout my career probably over 150 times in both state and federal courts throughout the country.
I want to talk to you for a second, Dr. Rentschler, about how you began working on this particular case, the case that's before the bench. When were you initially retained in connection with this case?
We were initially retained, I believe it was for the first trial. It was, I believe, maybe it was the fall prior to that actual trial that was last year.
All right. When you were, by the way, initially, were you hired by the defense?
No, we were not.
Were you hired by the Commonwealth?
We were not, no.
Was that a separate agency that hired you?
It was, yes.
It wasn't an insurance company, was it?
It was not, no, sir.
Okay. What were you initially asked to do by this separate entity?
Initially, we were asked, we were kind of constrained in what we were asked to do and to review, but we were asked to evaluate whether the injuries sustained by Mr. O'Keefe were consistent with being struck by the Lexus.
And who at ARCA was assigned on the team to undertake this commission?
There was myself, Dr. Dan Wolf, and I believe Mr. Scott Klein was another engineer who was involved.
And did all three of you join in the analysis that ultimately ended up in a report that you authored, or the three of you authored together?
We did, yes, sir.
What materials did you review in furtherance of your initial consultation in this matter?
Obviously, I looked at the medical records. We looked at photographs of the vehicles, information about the vehicles, photographs of the actual incident scene, various information pertaining to the Lexus itself.
You know who Dr. Dan Wolf is?
I do, yes.
Is that the other person, the Dan Wolf, the Dr. Wolf that you just mentioned?
That's correct, yes.
Did you and Dr. Wolf look at the same set of information? You were provided the same set of information?
We did, yes. We were provided a tranche of information that we, all three of us, looked at, yes.
Can you explain the difference between your area of expertise and Dr. Wolf's area of expertise? I don't want you to get into his analysis, just what area he covers. In other words, you're dealing with Alexis and pedestrian, Mr. John O'Keefe, correct?
Correct, yes.
What's the difference between the analysis that you undertook and the responsibilities of Dr. Dan Wolf?
So Dr. Wolf really concentrated looking at the vehicle itself and the damage to the vehicle, the damage to the taillight, which is really the only damage we have to that vehicle. And so his analysis pertained to evaluating the force associated with producing that damage, what's consistent with causing that type of fracture and damage to the taillight itself. Whereas my part of the investigation was really looking more at the injuries and looking at Mr. O'Keefe and his kinematics and his alleged or any interaction between him and the vehicle, and whether that would be consistent with his injuries as well as the damage that we see to the Lexus as evaluated by Dr. Wolf.
Did you ultimately issue a report, an initial report summarizing your opinions and your conclusions following your analysis?
We did, yes, sir.
About when was that report issued?
I believe it was sometime in February.
February of what year?
It would have been February of last year, 2024.
2024, okay,
correct.
Thank you. Were you able to provide an analysis, given the information that you had, were you able to provide an analysis for the biomechanical aspect of the analysis of the case?
I was, yes, sir.
All right, did you review medical records and other materials?
I did, yes.
Did you make note of anything with regard to Mr. O'Keefe's injury or injuries based on what you reviewed initially when you began your analysis?
I did, yes.
Can you describe what you noted in terms of Mr. O'Keefe's injuries?
There were really just two basically different areas of injury. There was injury to the head, there was a laceration on the rear kind of right occipital region of the head, which resulted in fractures, an occipital skull fracture, which is the rear part of your skull, as well as basilar skull fractures that propagated up through the skull. And then there were injuries which were noted or diagnosed to be superficial abrasions along his right arm.
What is a subscapular hemorrhage?
Subscapular is?
Yes.
Yeah. With respect to the head, is that what? Yes.
As it relates to the head.
Yes. Well, so when we talk about sub, there's subarachnoid, pia, hemorrhages, but basically they're hemorrhages, and scapular is hemorrhage under the scalp, but above the skull. Subdural is within on the surface of the brain, but scapular means that it's a hematoma or bleeding that occurs under the scalp but above the actual skull.
Did you note subscapular hemorrhage in your analysis of Mr. O'Keefe's injuries?
I believe there was extensive subscapular hemorrhaging.
What about skull fractures?
There were, as I described, occipital skull fracture in the back of the skull that then propagated forward the calivarium as well as the basilar or the base of the skull.
You mentioned subdural hemorrhage as one of the issues that you would look at normally. Did you note whether Mr. O'Keefe suffered from subdural hemorrhage?
He did, yes. He had sustained subdural hemorrhage as a result.
And also subarachnoid hemorrhage?
Correct, yes.
What about bilateral orbital ecchymosis?
He did, yes, bruising along the eyes, basically.
What does bilateral mean? Both?
Bilateral means left and right, correct.
Did you note a 1 centimeter or approximately 1 centimeter laceration to the upper right eyelid?
There was, a 1 centimeter, yeah. And so, you know, that's you know, a little less than half an inch laceration right above the right eye.
What about abrasions to the anterior and left aspect of the nose?
There were some abrasions on the nose, and then I believe a few lacerations as well.
Laceration on the right anterior tongue?
The tongue was lacerated, yes.
You noted with regard to one of Mr. O'Keefe's extremities, abrasions along that extremity.
Superficial abrasions, that's correct, sir.
Describe which arm we're talking about and what part of the arm.
It was the right arm. And it was from the forearm up towards the top of the shoulder. And there were various abrasions, what were diagnosed as superficial abrasions, along that kind of posterior aspect of the arm, the elbow, forearm, and the upper arm.
When you undertake an analysis, do you use biomechanics and kinematics both to try to evaluate whether or not a specific set of injuries are consistent or inconsistent with a proposed set of facts, or I guess I'll just leave it there, a proposed set of facts.
Yeah, I mean, those are basic steps to look at how an injury occurs. I mean, first you have to identify the injury, and that's by looking at the medical records and determining what the diagnosed injuries are. And then you have to determine the kinematics and the kinetics associated with a certain event. So how did the person move? How was their body moved? Did they interact with anything? And how did that result in loading or force being applied to the body? Those are basic steps of a biomechanical injury causation analysis.
How did you go about undertaking those steps in this particular case?
So in this particular case, we looked at how those injuries are actually produced or created. So occipital skull fracture, you need a sufficient force. You need a force of around maybe 1,400 or 1,600 pounds applied at the back of the skull to actually cause a fracture like that. The abrasions, superficial abrasions, and an abrasion is basically rubbing or scraping or friction that kind of scrapes away the top part of your skin, the epidermis. You have the epidermis, the dermis, and then the hypodermis. An abrasion is just gets into the top epidermis and doesn't get any farther. Laceration is an actual tearing or ripping of the skin, usually down past the epidermis into the dermis. And so that takes either a blunt object or a sharp edge, depending on whether it's an incision or laceration, to actually produce that type of an injury.
Did you look at patterns of injuries on Mr. O'Keefe?
Yes.
Did you also, the other side of that handshake, did you also look at damage to the vehicle, physical damage to the Lexus?
We did, yes. Our goal or what we were tasked with was to determine whether the injuries are consistent with the damage to the car. So clearly, you look at how these injuries are created, what injury mechanism you need to produce them, and then you look at the damage to the car. Can you line up contact between where those injuries occurred and how they occurred with damage to the vehicle?
What kind of materials did you review? In addition to, I'm guessing, photographs?
Photographs, yes. Autopsy photographs, as well as photographs of the vehicle and the damage to the Lexus.
What about medical records, hospital records, things of that nature?
Absolutely. That's the first step, looking at the injuries to find what the injuries are, what are the diagnosed injuries, as well as it's important to determine what injuries don't exist, because that's also helpful in determining whether certain impacts may or may not have actually occurred.
Did you receive a full file from the medical examiner's office in this case?
I did, yes, sir.
Did you also receive police reports, follow-up reports, witness statements, things of that nature in this case?
We did, yes.
Did you receive any data concerning the vehicle itself? Contained either in police reports or follow-up reports or expert reports?
We did, yes.
Mr. Jackson, I'm just going to ask you to slow down cadence of your voice a little bit.
It's late in the day and I'm doing it again, aren't I? I'll slow down. I forgot where I left off, but let me ask you sort of openly, was there anything else that you considered and analyzed in at least building a database from which you would build an analysis?
Well, yeah, I mean, we review all the materials that are provided to look at all the injuries, to look at all aspects of the vehicle, damage to the vehicle, information about what the vehicle may have been doing, any other evidence that may help contribute to looking at what either caused the injuries or what may or may not have caused the damage to that vehicle.
When you and your teammates undertook this analysis, did you even know who we were?
Initially, we did not. No, initially, I personally didn't know anything about the case. And we were asked not to do any research or to look up anything about it. We were given certain parameters, certain information, and that was it.
Did you follow those instructions?
I did, yes.
The undertaking, the analysis that you did, was it in keeping with the accepted methodology or methodologies in your field of engineering?
It was, yes.
Did you ultimately reach some opinions and conclusions based on that initial investigation or analysis?
I did, and we did it at ARCA, yes. Myself, Dr. Wolf, and Mr. Klein did.
Did you reach any opinions or conclusions with regard to the force required to produce the occipital skull fracture that you noted with Mr. O'Keefe, his head being struck by the rear tail lamp of the subject Lexus?
I did, yes.
Tell me what those opinions and conclusions were.
Well, again, we determined by looking at research and tolerance values that would take about 1,400 to 1,600 pounds of force to cause an occipital skull fracture. Now, we were tasked with looking at, again, could that result from impact with the car? So, one of the things we did is we took a head from a dummy basically that's instrumented with accelerometers, and we dropped it onto a taillight cover to attain a speed of 15 miles an hour. And so that would be comparable to the vehicle striking the head at 15 miles an hour. And I concluded a few things from that. A, that the force wasn't sufficient, or the acceleration wasn't sufficient to produce enough force to cause a skull fracture at 15 miles an hour. And also, when you look at the position and configuration of the occupant, it really wasn't possible to get a skull fracture by hitting the taillight and not sustain any other significant fractures. For instance, where the taillight's positioned to have an impact to the back of the head, you really couldn't have someone positioned in such a manner to strike just the head and not have subsequent concomitant injury to the neck or any other part of the body. So my findings with respect to the skull or the occipital skull fractures was that it likely did not occur as a result of contact, specifically with the taillight cover on the rear passenger side of the Lexus.
So as to the question of whether Mr. O'Keefe suffered the occipital skull fracture as a result of being hit by the tail lamp at 15 miles an hour, were you able to scientifically rule that out?
I was, yes, sir.
Was that to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
It was, yes.
Did you reach any opinions or conclusions regarding the abrasions on the right arm that you noted earlier on Mr. Keefe's body?
Yes, I believe my conclusions with respect to the abrasions are that it was inconsistent with contact to the taillight. And that not only that those injuries are inconsistent, but you would expect additional injuries, likely fractures to the hand and or the forearm, depending on the actual speed of the vehicle.
Other than the expectation that you would see fractures or other damage to the arm, what was the basis for your opinion that the linear abrasions would not result from impact with a non-damaged taillight traveling in reverse?
Well, you have to look at the kinematics associated with that, and that in order to get just superficial abrasions, that doesn't take a significant amount of force, but essentially that to have an arm contact the rear of the car, and we weren't really given any theory of how the arm contacted the car. So initially, we weren't privy to any theories or allegations of how this may occur. So just generally speaking, looking at the arm, how it would contact the car, and subsequent movement and interaction with the light cover, my opinion was that the injuries would be inconsistent, or the injuries that Mr. O'Keefe sustained on his right arm and didn't sustain would be inconsistent with actual interaction with the taillight.
Doctor, were your opinions and conclusions, along with those of your colleagues, reduced to a report?
They were, yes, sir.
Was that report, to your knowledge, ultimately turned over to both the defense and the Commonwealth in this case?
To my knowledge, it was, yes, sir.
I'm going to change gears for a second and bring us forward to the spring of 2024, after February of 2024, moving into the start of 2025. Did the defense at some point reach out to ARCA and contact you and Dr. Wolf?
They did, yes.
That was back in 2024 after the spring, correct?
That's correct, yes.
At some point, did the defense engage you specifically to testify?
Yes.
This year?
This year?
This year, meaning yes. This trial.
For this trial, yes.
Okay.
Yes, correct.
Were you asked to conduct further testing in furtherance of your potential testimony in this trial?
We were, yes, sir.
And were you provided additional materials from the defense in furtherance of your potential testimony and your testing?
We were provided additional material with respect to, yes, the theory of how this may have occurred and how Mr. O'Keefe may have sustained his injuries, allegedly.
Included in the materials that you were provided in anticipation of your testimony in this case, in this trial, were you provided anything from a company called Aperture?
We were, yes.
What were you provided from Aperture?
We were provided a written report from Aperture, a PowerPoint presentation, about 140 some pages from Aperture, and then a file material, I believe what was reviewed and the results of some testing that Aperture had conducted with respect to this case.
Was it your understanding that the Aperture PowerPoint was authored by a particular individual?
Yes, sir.
Who authored that PowerPoint as far as you knew it?
As far as I'm aware, it was Dr. Judson Welcher.
Your Honor, may we approach briefly?
Okay.
So, jurors, that was about scheduling. We picked up a lot of time today. I think it was because we did spend less time at sidebar and less time doing things outside your presence. So we're back on track, and we're going to let you go for today, and we're expecting a full day tomorrow. I can tell you, the lawyers tell me that we're definitely winding down. Okay, so please, those same three cautions, do not discuss this case with anyone. Don't do any independent research or investigation into this case. If you happen to see, hear, or read anything about this case, please disregard it and let us know. And please continue to be very careful with your social media use. So we'll see you ready to start at 9 o'clock.
You may be seated.
You're all set, Dr. Ensler.
Thank you.
I should have told you. I'm sorry.
So we'll see you tomorrow morning as well. So
thank you. All right. So first of all, anybody object if I give Ms. McLaughlin back the paperwork on the State of Rhode Island versus Michael Patino transcript or whatever she was giving me? Any objection to that?
No.
All right. Thank you. All right. So, Mr. Jackson, for purposes of your edits, so the text will be removed from 5, 6, 8, 9, 23. The word measurements, I think, is perhaps the only word there. 24, 31, 32, 34, 46, 47, 54, 55, 56, 58, 66, 67, 68, 69, 71, 72, 73, 74, and 75, and 76. Separately, pursuant to what will be an upcoming evidentiary ruling on whether foundation has been made, if you could separately have a way to exclude, if it becomes appropriate based on whatever ruling, based on the foundation that you're going to attempt to put, slides 9 to 23. Now, as I said to you at sidebar, once you do this, or if you talk to the Commonwealth, if there's no objection to some of those numbered slides that I said needed to be edited, if the Commonwealth agrees that they come in, you can go ahead and put them in because I would allow them if it's by agreement.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So do you expect that we will finish with Dr. Rentschler tomorrow?
I do, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Brennan?
I don't think I'll be as long as I was with the Commonwealth.
Okay.
Depending on how it goes, if he has an hour and a half, I expect that probably be about an hour, maybe an hour and 10 minutes.
Okay. All right. And then we'll figure out where we are Thursday. It seems that the case may be ready to go to the jury Friday, maybe Monday at the latest. But that's...
By Monday. Based on
does that seem like a fair estimate to you, Mr. Brennan?
I think we'll be ready Friday.
Okay. All right. So we'll see. Okay. All right. Thank you. We'll see everybody tomorrow morning. Yes.
Should I have Dr. Welcher in for tomorrow or wait for Wednesday?
Tomorrow's Wednesday already. Can we, Mr. Jackson, can we reevaluate that mid-morning or the luncheon break and see where we are, whether we need Dr. Welcher here in the afternoon?
Of course.
Okay. All right, we'll do that.
I think Mr. Lessing would have one issue he wanted to address the court.
Yes, Your Honor. With regard to various exhibits that Your Honor said would be admitted based upon the issue that we had with regard to the exhibit 88, Your Honor said you would...
Yes, we'll put those into evidence.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
That was the only item pressing for today.
Yeah, I said yesterday they'd come in, they're coming in. Okay, so those will be in evidence. Mr. Brennan, you were on notice yesterday that I was letting those in.
Of course.
Okay. All right, we're all set. We'll see you tomorrow.
All rise for the court, please.
Goodbye.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.